OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border, did I say border, of liberty and prosperity, and the highway to the north, almost. Yes, we are in Region 3 of OSHA. Not too far away from Region 2. How's everybody doing out there tonight? Been a couple of days. Yes, it has been a couple of days. What have I been doing? Hope you enjoyed your nice long weekend. We got back to work yesterday. Just realized I'm up like very early on Monday morning, so it makes a quality program. Or on Tuesday morning in this case. Makes a quality program kind of hard. And we're all about giving you quality programs here. So that's what we do here. A lot of exciting things going on out there. So this is the plan. I'm going to do the general news and everything tomorrow, but we're going to catch up on some of our safety news and OSHA news tonight. We might get into some other stuff, but you never know. Safety Wars, anything can happen in that war. So here we are. This is off of Safety and Health Magazine. Oregon OSHA announces winners of its annual student competition. Students from Sherwood and Cleveland High Schools took first place prizes in this year's Oregon OSHA media contest to promote young workers' safety and health awareness. So, one of the things, right, with the, and I had this conversation here, right, and, Sherwood High School's Colby Johnson won $500 for his first season's entry in the video category. Say oh yes to oh. Yes. Video highlights common workplace hazards and equipment that young workers may encounter. So OSHA has a whole bunch of resources for the young worker here. And I was having this conversation today with somebody. Now, I haven't seen the guy in about 30 years. Kind of hard. Scary that I can say that now. Just a chance meeting at a meeting, right, sort of thing. And he's like, yeah, I know you. And I said, yeah, I know you. I don't know where I know you from. And you know, we got to start talking and everything else here. And, I was like, yeah, I know you from somewhere, one of these jobs. So we figured it was an environmental cleanup early to mid to 1990s. So we're talking about young workers, right? And the situations that they get themselves involved in. So one of the things is, you want to do a good job, especially if you're an ambitious young worker. Right? That's one of the, we want to do a good job. We want to go out there and, do the whole thing. Let's do a share screen here. This is right off of the OSHA website. Young workers, you have rights. Where, you want to give it all for your everyone has different situations, but you want to give it all for your a new employer. You're happy to even get a job in a lot of cases. A lot of times, I've met a lot of young workers where they were the first person in memory to have a job in their family. It could be for a whole host of reasons. We're not judging people. We don't do that. Well, we do it sometimes, but for people in the worker, not really. And they don't know that there are rights, that you have a right. That's why I always recommend. Hold on here. No, I always recommend that as a graduation present, give them an OSHA 10-hour course. Right? Now you may say, well, Jim, that's one hell of a graduation present. Okay, yeah, maybe it is a one hell of a graduation present. But if it saves them from getting hurt on the job, that's a good thing with that. If you can tell them to tune in to any of the great programs here on Safety FM that we have, tell them to do that. I know that's for free here. And, you know, here we're referencing the Young Workers website here. So the big thing is you have rights. You have a right to a safe and healthful workplace for your recognized hazards, right? Number one. Number two is, and here's something else, right? Safe work is rewarding work. Your employer has a responsibility to provide a safe workplace. Employers must follow all OSHA safety and health standards to prevent you from being injured or becoming ill on the job. If you are under the age of 18, there may be limits on the hours you work, the jobs you do, and the equipment that you use. That all depends on what state you're in, even though there are federal laws on it. States often have a little bit of a different thing. So where do you go? You go to your State Department of Labor on that, right? Learn about the federal and state wage and hour laws there, right? You have a right, and these are the basic OSHA rights, right? Work in a safe place, receive safety and health training in a language that you understand. Let me comment on that a little bit. Now, people are like, well, what's there to comment on? You know, in a language that you understand, right? Here. All right. Now, and I'm not picking on any one group or whatever. We know that English, right? There are different dialects. With the way I speak, speech impediment and everything, I can get away very easily going down south and speaking because they think I'm from like Oklahoma. I've heard that. Boy, you're from Tulsa, aren't you? I recognize a Tulsa person when I see. No, I'm from New Jersey. They're like, oh, you sound like you're from Tulsa, and everything. So I've been fortunate where I can get away with different things. So what happens is you go down south or you go up north, right? And this also has happened. Well, you sound like you're from down south, Jim. And you get a lot of people that won't listen to you and don't respect you. Same thing down south. They don't respect a lot of northerners, you know, in the United States. Now, this still goes on 160 years after the Civil War. But that's reality. That's what you have to do. You got to make those connections like Jay Allen talks about in his new book. No, you got to make connections. Can you make connections with people? Right? So same thing goes if I'm over in, I recently did some training classes over via Zoom in Scotland, for example. And guess what? Different types of things, dialects, different this, different that, all, you know, it goes in there, and you got to make the connection. People understand it. Thankfully, English is such that most people speak standard English, and they're able to understand each other, able to converse. Spanish, now, I'm a linguist, but the Spanish that's out there is Catalan Spanish. Right, so you go and you translate things. You go and you speak from someone from Spain. Often, They do not understand people from Central America, South America, even in the United States, because it's a different kind of Spanish. So it has to be a language that you understand at a level you can understand. So I often get the comments, well, Jim, sometimes you talk over people. And I tell people, if they don't understand something, please stop. Say, time out, Jim. Can you explain that? Because I know I have a tendency for that sometimes. Here you see this on the show. But again, now, is it the Spanish that they speak? Because, we put up the Spanish language resources like signs and everything. And the guys are like, no, that's not what that means. Right? Or they end up having to explain it. Right? I've also seen where one Spanish person who speaks Spanish has to speak through an interpreter to other people who speak Spanish. Different words and everything. Now, I'm sure there's plenty of allowances and everything else in there. But again, you got to be able to understand. I did a job where it was predominantly everyone spoke Caribbean English. Caribbean English, different type of English. They have maybe some French thrown in there, some Spanish, and other languages thrown in there that picked up and they're out of that region. Same thing goes for German. You have High German and you have Low German. Right, so you have a lot of different dialects from way back when. Don't understand in Poland. You have Polish and you have Gorak, right, which is another language. Again, you gotta get people to understand. It's not only for communicating information, but it's also for training where you're teaching a skill. You have to have a connection with the people there. But one thing I will say, generally speaking, and the Latino communities I've done training in with an interpreter, and for a while there I was able to speak Spanish pretty well. There I picked it up. They make allowances. That's one thing I'll say about it. They'll make allowances. As long as you're making an attempt to speak and communicate, they'll respect that, generally speaking, versus elsewhere. And we won't mention those groups. Believe me. You don't speak perfect, their language perfect. That happened to my father, where he was just getting back into, and it was one of his favorite stories, into speaking German, because he grew up speaking German in his house, at home. Now, that was the native language. And we went to Germany, and he was just picking it up again. I hadn't spoken it in a long time regularly. So just got, boom, boom, boom. I'm doing good. He goes into a shop to buy something, and the woman behind the counter says, why don't you just speak English? and perfect English, because it wasn't perfect German. But that's it. So all this training, right, has to be in a language that you understand, on a level that you understand. Right. Ask, and if you're an instructor, you're not there to impress people, which was covered in Jay Allen's new book. Right? We'll do a little thing on that here. Again, make a connection with the people. That's part of what it is. Ask questions if you don't understand instructions or if something seems unsafe. Younger workers, you may not think things are unsafe. Well, they are. Use and retrain on required safety gear such as hard hats, goggles, and earplugs. Exercise your workplace safety rights without retaliation or discrimination. And file a confidential complaint with OSHA, 1-800-321-OSHA or OSHA.gov. They'll tell you how to do that. All right. So your employer must provide us workplace service series, recognize hazards, follow all OSHA safety and health hazards. Provide training about workplace hazards and required safety gear. They just can't throw you stuff and tell you to put it on. Tell you where to get answers to your safety and health questions and tell you what to do if you get hurt on the job. Employers must pay for most types of safety gear. To help protect yourself, you can report unsafe conditions to a shift team leader or supervisor, wear any safety gear required to do your job. Follow the safety rules, ask questions, and ask for help. And that's all your, right, 1-800-321-OSHA on there. So, again, language that you understand, level that you understand. And with that, so for employers, let's see what they have here. Do you employ young workers? Young workers are those new to the workforce, even up to the age of 24. Young workers can be a real asset to your workforce, however, it may be their first job or the first time they are operating equipment. Child labor laws exist for improper things, right? And understand and comply with the relevant federal and state child labor laws. For example, these laws prohibit youth from working certain hours and from performing dangerous and hazardous work. Ensure that young workers receive training to recognize hazards and are competent in safe work practices. Training should be in a language and vocabulary that workers can understand and should include prevention of fires, accidents, and violent situations, and what to do if injured. Implement a mentoring program or buddy system for new young workers. Have an adult or experienced young worker answer questions and help the new young worker learn the ropes of a new job. Encourage young workers to ask questions about tasks or procedures that are unclear or not understood. Tell them whom to ask. Remember that young workers are not just little adults. You must be mindful of the unique aspects of communicating with young workers. Now, what does that mean? Again, language and ways that they could understand. Often, workers do better, right? Especially young workers. Now, again, the way things are going, they like to often hear constant feedback. Hey, you're doing good. You're doing good. We appreciate blah, blah, blah. We appreciate you. They often want to hear that, right? They want feedback, immediate feedback. Just it's the culture. The other thing is this, embrace, they may want to hear, they want to make it text messages, more social media, team calls, things of that nature out there. That, you know, that's what, the old way was, well, you got to learn, you have to learn. Work with your employer. So, and blah, 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 blah. Well, the pendulum swung the other way. They're more apt to not be interested in how you communicate or you have to, right? Or they're going to make the effort. You're going to have to make the effort. That's the way it is. That's why, I'll give them a small plug here, Microsoft Teams and the whole Microsoft, all their software. It's all integrated. Again, younger workers like that. The older workers sometimes have an issue with that or may take a couple of days to catch on to this stuff with using that platform. But there are ways of learning that and everything else. And if you're an older worker, you got to learn, right? Ensure that equipment operated by young workers is both legal and safe for them to use. Again, this is all the general duty clause if you are a worker, if you are an employer. Employers are strongly encouraged to develop an injury and illness prevention program. That's like out the window, right? 10 years ago, that was very popular, but not so much anymore with that. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying not as popular. And again, they have a lot of times on-site consultation. So here's for parents and educators. Employers must provide, again, the same stuff. Parents, take an active role in employment decisions of your children. Be aware. Know where your children are working, what they are doing. Ask questions. Frequently ask about what they did at work and the training and supervision provided. Discuss any problems and or concerns. Report hazards. Now, the thing is, they say parents here. Sorry, a lot of people don't have parents. They have guardians here. Again, whatever it is, a trusted adult. Right, I like that terminology, trusted adult. Parent may not be the trusted adult in this area. If you're a parent, right, and I was having a conversation with somebody else today, most important thing you need to know is what you don't know. Well, what do you mean? You go, no, so oftentimes we come out of college as professionals or a trade school even, and you think you know everything. Sorry, you think you're a know-it-all. Turns people off, number one. Number two is one of the things that college is supposed to teach you is what you know and what you don't know, to ask questions. So people say, well, is it more important to know things? Or I say, yeah, it's important to know. I've made a lifetime out of knowing things. Knowing when to apply them, right? And sometimes I don't know when to shut up. I get it. I tell people if they're working, hey, if I'm off in the weeds, just let me know here. And we'll bring it back around. But it's what you know and what you don't know is more important. What's more important? I say what you don't know, what you don't know. That is more important. You know what you know and know what you don't know. Or as my father used to say, he said it a little bit different way. Right, there are four different types of people. Right, the smart people who know they're smart, you can deal with them. Right, hey, they're smart, they know they're smart. Then you have the dumb people who know they're dumb at the other end, right? And they don't know. And I met people like this where they're very humble. Look, I don't know. Maybe dumb is a harsh word, but you know, hey, I don't know. So you have two there, right? So smart people who know they're smart, dumb people who know they're dumb, or people who know that they don't know something about something. And you can deal with them. The third kind of person is the smart person who thinks they're dumb. There's usually a self-confidence issue there with that, or they don't realize they know something. You can deal with them, no problem. But the worst kind of person situation you ever want to be, and you don't want to be this person, is the last remaining category. The dumb people who think they're smart and the world is filled with them. They think that just because they know this AI stuff, they know the smartphone, right? That they know everything. Again, that's not something that you really want to, pardon me, where you want to be. So you got to know what you know, know what you don't know. That's the important thing. Be aware. Ask questions if you're a parent, or I would say, right, a responsible, trusted adult. Report hazards. Help young workers report hazards to the managers, or if necessary, to OSHA if things get extreme, if the work environment seems unsafe. Because one thing that the OSHA is going to ask you, now, at least my experience was, did you try to resolve this internally? Watch for signs of concern. Is the job taking too much of a physical or mental toll on your young worker? How's your child's performance at school? A loss of interest in or energy for school could mean the job is too demanding. Other signs of concern could include increased stress levels, anxiety, fatigue, and depression. Now, this is the other thing with this. All right, oftentimes, young people may be short-sighted. Old adults might be too, but short-sighted, where they don't want to go to school because they have a little bit of bling in their pocket. Or they have some money. Well, hey, I don't have to go to school. I can make money this way. And as I pointed out to a whole bunch of folks here, right, well, that were in their 20s and 30s, I said, look, you're a smart person. Why don't you go and get an education? Go to night school. Go to something like that. Community college. Get a little educated. Or get your GED. Go back to school. Get your high school. Because I said, look, you're making money now. You're making a good clip here. You're a laborer. You're unskilled labor. You're doing this and everything. And what happens?
Right.
And what happens is your body starts to break down. You get hurt at work. High risk work. Then what are you going to do? You're going to be forced to learn a new skill. And if you haven't built up a capacity, haven't built up your education or anything else in there, guess what happens? You get stuck. I know, and the people who I told this, a couple of them took me up on it. got a little bit of an education, night school, learned a trade, We're no longer unskilled workers, and we're able to build up that capacity in themselves and the resilience in themselves. And what ended up happening with them? They started to get their bodies started to break down. They got hurt. They were able to change careers a little bit more easier than that. You know, you got to do the time. Unfortunately, education is one of those things where you got to do the time. As an educator, right, understand your role. You have an important opportunity to teach students safety and health skills to help them succeed and be safe at work. This is what I did with New Jersey City University for many years, helping young workers, helping people who were down on their luck and everything else. Teach young workers their rights to provide safety information, incorporate information on workers' rights and occupational safety and health hazards. Now, refer them over to this. No, refer them over to this network here, right? With that. So, students can use this knowledge, blah, blah. Okay, great. So, here's some resources here. Your construction, safety, and health program, Safe Workers. You can go over to OSHA.gov. They have a link here with this. NIOSH, they have a Youth at Work Talking Safety Curriculum. Here, let's see what that is. Do they still have it up there? No, it was moved to the archive. Right, and you can go there. Maybe a little bit dated, but it's, you know, and there, let's see, New Jersey. PowerPoint presentations. And everything else. Last read is summer 2015. You know what? I'm sure there may be somewhere there. Not in there. So as we know, a lot of this stuff is being sanitized from the official government websites. Okay. With that up. Sorry, folks. Let's go to commercial break while I get the where I want to be here up and running. Old Stale and Hackneyed. Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, Jessica, I am your father. So let's go on over to some OSHA news. Here, and this is Department of Labor News. Let's do a share screen here. U.S. Department of Labor celebrates 50 years of partnering with small businesses to save lives, prevent injuries, and strengthen the bottom line. For more than half a century, the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration's on-site consultation program has been helping small and medium-sized businesses protect workers and improve safety at no cost and with complete confidentiality, right, with that. So, again, they have partnerships and everything else. With a Republican administration, normally, generally speaking, this is where their focus is compliance, assistance, not compliance, enforcement, right? The U.S. Department of Labor's Employee Benefits Security Administration has rescinded a 2022 compliance release that previously discouraged fiduciaries from including cryptocurrency options. So, like everything else going on with the Trump administration, right, there is the encouragement of the cryptocurrencies. So the Department of, agencies essentially were discouraging people from doing their thing, right? From cryptocurrencies. Now it's back to, now they're back with, they're taking a neutral stance on that. From yesterday, U.S. Department of Labor and Holder Construction celebrated 20 years of safety partnership. They started in 2005 with these partnerships with Holder Construction Group. Since 2005, these partnerships have focused on reducing injuries, illnesses, and exposure to hazards while expanding safety training and promoting strong safety and health programs. The collaboration with Holder supports OSHA's long-range efforts to foster cooperative safety management between contractors and the federal government. Again, people are trying to get along and be friendly here, you know, with things. So here we have U.S. Department of Labor recovers $594,000 in back wages, right? And if you look down here, I mean, this is an ongoing theme here with this, all right? So let's say that let's say you're an employer. So all together now, I'm an employer, right? 3, 2, 1. I'm an employer, right? One of the things that you need to do is, yes, that's a, we can have jokes here. Yes, we know how to do, not all doom and gloom, right? So one of the things is if you're an employer, you have to keep accurate time cards. So often what happens if you're working not 7 hours or 8 hours, you're working 8 hours and 7 minutes. Do you round down to 8 o'clock, let me start over. Ay, ay, ay. Been a long day, folks. So let's say that you work 8 hours and 15 minutes. So you clock out at 8 hours and 15 minutes. Do they pay you till 8 o'clock or 8:30? Or do they pay you in quarter hour increments? And now you punch out at 8 hours, 7 minutes and 30 seconds. Do they round down or round up? Well, this is what the issue is here with this contractor. With rounding things, and it costs them big time, because $594 in back wages with this, and with over 419 workers, that's over $1,000 per worker is what we're looking at. Adds up here. Now let's mosey on over to the U.S. EPA. So EPA to hold June 4th public hearing on the cleanup plan for John Mansfield Corporation Superfund site in Waukegan, Illinois. So they're telling everybody to mosey on over there on Wednesday, June 4th from 6 to 7 p.m. And they're going to be talking about that. So go and check that out there. Check out the OSHA website. Now, there was there's a lot of money allocated for help protect from water monitoring at beaches. So the EPA put out a lot of grants to all of these all these states with along the coast, the Great Lakes, right, the coastal states, money for that, so they could notify people if there's unsafe to go on the beach because the New York, New Jersey area, it's usually after a huge rainstorm and New York dumps all of its raw sewage into the water there, where it only had a primary treatment like a settling tank because they have a confined sewage overflow. They have a combined sewage of sanitary sewer and stormwater sewer. So now they overload their pre-existing sewage treatment plants, and they go into little auxiliary plants and some of them. Then they get overloaded, and now you have shit all over the place with that. It's gotten better since the 1980s. Now, one of the things, right, when how we used to go swimming in the Arthur Kill back in the day, right? So you wouldn't, now the water was so turbid, and you know, you had those fish, those special species of fish that went by. Now, Coney Island whitefish, and you can look up what that is. Not at work, though. And, you know, all that went away. A lot of cleanup. One of the friends of the Pulsel family, Jim McGreevy, he was instrumental in getting the waters around New Jersey cleaned up, specifically Woodbridge and the Arthur Kill, after they closed the Fresh Kills landfill through a series of lawsuits back in the 90s. And now you can see way down in the water. It's almost as good as that Cuba Gooding Jr. Movie where he was a diver, right? And that was all, we always laugh because when the diving school for the U.S. Navy was in Bayonne, you couldn't go in that water. Even back then, people didn't go in the water because it's all full of oil. And God knows what. You know, the Passaic River, the Hackensack River, all a Newark Bay. I mean, heavy-duty industrial pollution, like dioxin, oils, mercury, all that crap went in there. Even then, they didn't stop. But in the Cuba Gooding Jr. movie, right, where he played the African-American diving person, right? I forget the guy's name, right? That was like pristine water. That ain't the way it is, but water's a lot cleaner than what it was. I was trying to explain that about around exit 13 in on the New Jersey Turnpike to my son. That the, with Bayway Refinery, they did a lot of cleanup there over the years. And when I used to pass by there back in the 70s, we would drive through that, through the turnpike goes through the refinery, and it used to smell from the refinery. Now it just smells from the sewage treatment plant that they put the turnpike over, you know. But you had to combine, and then you had Doremus Boulevard, which was a couple of exits up where you had a rendering plant that my uncle and his company cleaned up, Ken's Marine Service out of Bayonne. And it was just, you know, just horrible smells, you know, up there. Yes, and Al Gore drove there through there in his movie, right? Also. Right? There's talking about air quality as you drive by the refinery. But anyway, all this stuff, all from the same thing. It's all there to, and every, a lot of states got that, got the, money here over the last week or so, and they're just doling it out. Yeah, that's what we got. We got to go back to the camera because I think we're out of government websites here. All right, so if you're a new listener, we only share government websites here. Very rarely do we ever do non-government websites. Have I done it? Yeah, but not really. Okay. Some news from around the country here. So Cal OSHA, this is from May 21st. We might have discussed that previously, but lead exposure during drive race of last, Cal OSHA clarifies their guidance here. So the California Division of Occupational Safety and Health has clarified its guidance on preventing lead exposure among workers who perform drive race of blasting. Now, here, let me... I can share this because it's a government website and link to, and we got it right here. So under the California Labor Code and California Occupational Safety and Health Act, all employers in California are legally required to provide and maintain a safe and healthy workplace for employees. The California Code of Regulations, Title 8, Section 1532.1, lead is CalOSHA's occupational health standard for lead exposures in the construction industry. Its purpose is to protect employees who may be exposed to lead while performing construction work. CalOSHA has a separate standard for lead exposures in general industry. So I got a phone call from a family member about lead-based paint last night. We were talking at length about it. So a little bit of a background here. So I think if you're a long-term listener, you know that I worked for an industrial painting outfit. Two of them, actually. Three at one time, at one point. And technically. But they... actually, four. All right. So lead, right? So abrasive blasting, what is it? So they put compressed air into a stream of sand. It used to be sand. We used to call it sandblasting. Now it's called abrasive blasting because they not only use sand. And when the minute that you say sand, people think respirable crystalline silica, RCS. And no, there is an issue. Now, when you pulverize the paint off of the surface, what you want is a profile. So why would you abrasively blast lead-based paint, especially in the oil industry here, is that... And pipelines is usually what they're talking about. There may be some ships and everything, but that's not construction. Is that you're trying to remove the paint, right? That and put, depending on your spec, and you're trying to make a profile on there. So there are, I believe, six different types of profiles where you leave a little bit of paint on there, or you a lot of paint you leave on there, or no paint, right? And that puts it into the air. How do you mitigate that? There's a couple of ways that you can mitigate that. One of the ways is that the PPE option, which is not a good option. Another option is that they wet abrasive blast, so they introduce water into the stream, which lowers, right, the dust, right? Water lowers dust, and then you have to mitigate it on that. That's one way of handling it. There are others, numerous ways. The other way is to do it with a robot. And there are robots out there that do abrasive blasting here that you don't, and that they've had these things for many years, for 20 years. Why? You remove the worker totally out of the situation. You got to put the worker into the situation. You have an engineering control, which is wet abrasive blasting, and you always have to be in supplied air. If you're abrasive blasting, even if you're outside. Now, if you're, what kind of exposure levels will you get? You're going to get over the permissible exposure limit of 50 micrograms per meter cubed for lead almost all the time, but which means that you have to do sampling. So this is what we're going to do. I got to take a short break here, and we're going to put on some music for your enjoyment. And, that's what we're going to do. So enjoy the music. And we have a message that's coming across about a situation. So here.
Away. The waiting room's filled with empty air. No doctor's footsteps coming anywhere. A shortage looms like a ghost in town. The healing hands are nowhere to be found. Where did they go, the ones in white? Left us holding on through the endless night. We're searching for care, but no one's there. Doctor shortage blues echo everywhere. Stethoscopes lay still on the shelf. We're out here trying to heal ourselves. Knocking on doors that never unlock. Tick tock goes the empty clock. Where did they go, the ones in white? Left us holding on through the endless night. We're searching for care, but no one's there. Doctor shortage blues echo everywhere. A minor ache turns to a shout. No cure around to sort it out. Hope feels like it's breaking in two. When the ones who care can't get through. The streets are quiet, not a scrub in sight. Dreams of help fade into the night. We're holding on with makeshift glue. The fragile hope of pulling through. Streets are quiet, not a scrub in sight. Dreams of help fade into the night. We're holding on with makeshift glue. The fragile hope of pulling through.
As the numbers change, waves of green and a sea of strange. Buy the dips and sell the highs, living for the trade with bloodshot eyes. Money moves on an endless ride. Risk it all or let it slide. Game where fortunes collide. Keep your cool while the stakes are high. Whispers rise on the trading floor. A rumor's worth a dollar, no more. All a spin. Bold they lose, the brave they win. Dive deep into the chaos charted.
but he moves on an endless ride. Risk it all or let it slide. In the game where fortunes collide, keep you cool while the stakes are high.
Okay, that is Enjoy the Music from Safety Warrior. Yes, so we have a sick family member at home, and we had to, I had to be consulted. So that's just the way it is. What else we got here? So, you know, talking about, getting back to abrasive blasting, right? There's a lot of misconceptions there with that. So, for example, let's say you're in a shipyard. No, there's no specific standard in the shipyard standard, 1915, on that. But it clearly states when you go into letters of interpretation and other regulations, because people have a tendency of not reading things, that if it's not covered in the shipyard standard, then it's a 1910 standard. 1910 has a industrial ventilation standard that talks about abrasive blasting. So, and there are also industry standards for that. What happens? Employers don't want to spend the money or the time, or they don't have the resources or the time to send people out for training, fit testing, medical stuff, evaluations, if they're necessary, or, anything like that. Right. So, what it is, guys, with that. Here's some more news out of EHS, Daily Advisor. This is from February. This is an older story from February. Smelly Mel's and Sewer Rat Plumbing face a $530,000 Cal OSHA fine. Smelly Mel's Plumbing and Sewer Rat Plumbing face a total of $529,000 in state fines for violating safety regulations that resulted in serious injuries to a construction worker during a trench collapse in San Mateo. Cal OSHA cited two employers after finding a total of 16 violations. So what do we have here? According to the article from EHS Daily Advisor, there were 16 different violations, right? Inspection failure, no competent person inspecting stuff, lack of safe exit routes, no adequate protective systems in trench, failure to protect workers from falling debris or debris, as my mother would say, foot protection, again, no proper foot protection. Especially when the shack came around. Insufficient emergency medical provisions. Again, for nobody there to the appropriate number of people to render first aid. Employers then failed to notify Cal OSHA before the start of work. The annual permit required activity of construction and excavation over 5 feet in depth. And an injury and illness prevention program. Right? In California, you got to have one. And it goes on and on and on with that. I don't know. Thank you, EHS Advisor. Now, this I don't know this person. No, as it says in our introduction, we're not usually part of the story. No, not right. Not all the time. Sometimes we are. Now, I am familiar with this facility here. I've done a little bit of work in there, so for complete disclosure here. This is from WSWS News, World Socialist website, right? So this is, again, from politically oriented website, but we're going to trust some of the things. I can't guarantee everything that they're saying here, but Raymond Fage, or Fage, a 59-year-old DEP worker, that's city DEP, was killed and two others injured Saturday, May 24th in an explosion on a sewage boat on the Hudson River in New York City. The vessel was docked at the North River Waste Resource Recovery Facility near 138th Street in West Harlem. New York City Fire Department Assistant Chief David Sims said Phage was flown by the force of the explosion in between the pier and the vessel itself. That is probably one of the worst areas you ever want to be in, is between a vessel and a pier. Right? Because when that thing, when the waves come and that thing starts moving, you're going to get crushed. Just the way it is. Right? The first responders found Phage unconscious in the river, the police said, and he was declared dead at the scene. Another worker on the city-owned motorized vessel Hunts Point, which I've seen many times, right, was taken to the hospital while a third refused medical treatment. Fisher worked for the city for 33 years, was well-respected, and everything else. With that, they're doing an investigation. They're doing an investigation here. So the 290-foot motor vessel Hunts Point, which was completed at Louisiana's Volger Shipyards 2013, hauls raw sewage from the city to the wastewater treatment facility in Upper Manhattan. It was docked near the facility when the blast occurred. Now, what could cause something like this? And I'm just speculating here with this. Now, ignition of methane from the sewage, or maybe hydrogen sulfide. Most likely methane. Now, according to the U.S. Coast Guard and their X account, the blast is linked to a hot work process aboard a dock boat. So it may not have even been that on that ship, right? Another boat, right? But even if preliminary reports indicate that a welding torch may have ignited methane gas and raw sewage that had built up in the tight spaces, a.k.a. enclosed spaces, confined spaces on the ship, and none of this has been substantiated yet. The suggestion that Phage was responsible for his own death is aimed at preempting any serious investigation, exonerating city officials of any responsibility. Yeah, that's probably true. with that, again, when it's always blame the worker. We don't have to worry about anything else. So I imagine there is currently an investigation here for this. And rest in peace. And let's send out a prayer to the families on here. So that's basically all I have for tonight for Safety Wars. We got about a minute 44 seconds. We're going to run through our intro, outro. And I want to see, God willing, we'll be back here tomorrow night for Safety Wars. This is Jim Polzel, and we are going out there, and we'll see you in a little bit. So, let's see here.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.